Good evening. Time being 5:30, we will kick on with the meeting. My name is Paula Reid, Mayor of Kingborough, and it is my pleasure to welcome everybody here to tonight's council meeting on Monday the 6th of November 2023. Welcome to those members who are with us in the public gallery and also to anyone who is watching along at home on the live stream via YouTube. Time being 5:30pm, I now officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and in accordance with council's policy, I'll now ask the general manager to confirm that the recording has started.
Confirm, Mayor.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land that we're meeting on this evening, pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reid, the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordover, Councillor Dean, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the General Manager, Mr Arnold, the Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, the Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, the Manager of Environmental Services, Ms Quinn, the Manager of Development Services, Ms Tyler Moore, the Senior Strategic Planner, Mr Stander, our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton, and our Communications and Engagement Support Officer, Ms Klein. We have apologies this evening from Councillor Fox. We turn now to page one, confirmation of minutes, that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 20 held on the 16th of October 2023 be confirmed as a true record. Looking for a mover and a seconder. Got a mover in Councillor Bain and a seconder in Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. We're turning now to page two, workshops held since the last Council meeting. There were two. On the 23rd of October, there was a workshop in relation to the playground strategy, and on the 30th of October, there was a workshop in relation to the Southern Outlet Fifth Lane. Still on page two, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest? Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Mayor. Declaring an interest in item 16.2, the community grants, and I will be leaving the room.
Thank you. Any further conflicts? If not, we're still on page two, transfer of agenda items. To reflect some concerns that were circulated over the weekend, I'd like to propose that we move item 16.1, which is the biodiversity offset policy, that we move that to be discussed as the first item after questions without notice, so that it comes before we move into the planning authority to consider item 13.1. I'm just wondering if that's acceptable to... Are you happy to move that? Can I have a seconder, Councillor Midgley? Thank you. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Is there any other item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed or closed into open? No? Thank you. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public have a question without notice they'd like to ask? Thank you. If you'd like to come up, state your name and suburb for the record. Thank you.
Charles Biggins, Leslie Barr. My first question this evening, trees on private land bylaw, proposed bylaw. I have a few questions relating this draft policy, draft bylaw. How many trees on private land do you think there are in Kingborough? Thousands? Hundreds of thousands? Millions? Tens of millions? How many council staff, compliance officers will Kingborough employ to oversee this bylaw, and at what cost? In the event...
Could we take the questions just one by one?
Yeah,
so
sure.
Just to break it down to make it easier. Ms Quinn, can you assist us with that?
Through you, Mayor. Right. How many trees are there in Kingborough on private land?
Yep.
That's the question? Yep. I wouldn't like to hazard a guess. I would say it would be in the millions.
You're creating a bylaw to govern those trees. It might be a good idea to know what you're actually governing.
Sorry, can I...
How many council staff compliance officers will Kingborough employ to oversee those millions of trees and that bylaw, and at what cost will that be to Kingborough Council?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, we don't intend to employ any additional compliance staff than our current complement, and there's a team of seven in our compliance unit.
So your compliance unit there, they have other duties apart from treason bylaw, because you don't have a tree bylaw at the moment, so...
Yes, they do have additional duties in relation to other compliance areas, such as parking infringement and traffic.
Yeah, so I'm imagining that they're employed full-time at the moment doing these other things, and this will be an additional workload?
Correct.
How does that work?
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor, the provisions of the current bylaw are no different to what we've previously had within the bylaw that has been administered by both our compliance staff and staff within our environmental services team.
Mr. Biggins, further follow-up question?
Yeah, okay. We haven't had a trees bylaw for the last 2 years. Council staff have been fully employed. This is going to be an additional workload. There is no additional staff. I see an arithmetic problem there. We'll just leave that.
Mr. Biggins, could I just remind you this is question nine time. It's not to debate the answers to the questions that we provide you with. We're happy to provide the answers, but then we move on to the next question,
okay.
Not commentary.
Moving on to
debate.
The next question then. In a recent storm event, I attended to windthrown trees, half uprooted across driveways and hung up in other trees. The proposed bylaw has no exemption for dangerous trees. How does council expect this permit system to operate in a storm event?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor, as the bylaw, which was very similar, as Mr. Smee alluded to in the past, in a storm event, those trees, if they've already come down, they don't require a permit, so no application will be required.
Then these trees were not down, they're hung up, they're dangerous trees. There's no exemption in the bylaw, it specifically states, for hazardous or dangerous trees. They still need a permit.
I'm taking that as a further question rather than commentary, Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. In the past, obviously, there's been many storm events whilst the previous bylaw, was in action. And what has happened in the past is common sense, but also a set of guidelines that sit beside behind the bylaw that are endorsed by council, or were endorsed by council during the previous bylaw, which set out how decisions are made around the bylaw, and that includes the ability for urgent trees to be removed, trees that are hazardous. Council isn't in the business, you can imagine, of making people apply for a permit for something that's already highly damaged or removed, fallen.
Further question, Mr. Biggins.
At the risk of making commentary, I will
Thank
leave
you.
That. Another question relating to the role of council. It's come to my attention that contrary to the beliefs held by some of the councillors of this local council is a body corporate, and it is described as such in the Local Government Act. When council sits as the planning authority, they describe themselves as council acting as the planning authority. When they are sitting for general council business, they could equally describe themselves as council acting as local government. This would be a more accurate description, as there is only two tiers of government, state and federal. Your local council is acting in the role of local government under the Local Government Act, but they remain a body corporate. It is deeply disturbing that the elected directors, councillors, misunderstand what their job is. Their job is, as far as I can tell, to represent the interest of the stakeholders of the body corporate and to direct the Governor General or CEO of the council body corporate. Please provide evidence that this statement is incorrect.
Can I just... I'll pass to the General Manager, but can I just indicate I've not heard the term body corporate being used in reference to members of this council. That's certainly not a view that I hold. We are enshrined under the Local Government Act to operate as a council, and that's where our powers come from. And likewise, the Local Government Act says that we sit as a planning authority, but I'll hand over to the General Manager to provide some additional information.
Through you, Mayor. Mr Biggins, I draw your attention to the Local Government Act 1993 in Tasmania, and particularly Section 20, which talks about the powers and functions and role of a council.
It is described as a body corporate in the Act and on the state, on the Department of Premier own website. The function and structure of a council is a corporate entity and is described as a body corporate. Yes or no?
General Manager. I'll take that on notice, but I think you're interchanging two terms, body corporate and corporate entity, are two separate, different things. Without having the Act in front of me, I won't confirm that. We'll take that on notice. But if you could reference that, other than the General Manager has referenced Section 20 of the Local Government Act, which articulates what the powers of council are, I'd be interested to what section you're referring to, if you could provide that to us.
Section 19.
Okay. Thank you. We'll take that on notice.
Regarding the fire levy that councils are paid by the state government to collect, the more I look at the fire service bill, the more it makes sense. The $34,000 commercial fire levy quoted by the LGAT was for a $20 million complex in Kingston with an AAV value of $1.3 million. An average annual rent value of $1.3 million. They were only paying the equivalent of 0.19% of AAV value. How much do you think it's worth for the fire service to turn up to one of our busy shopping centres to check on a smoke alarm? How many call-outs to similar complexes do you think our volunteers or retained brigade should be servicing? The reality is Kingborough has very low rates, and I was told that the reason Kingston doesn't have any full-time firefighters is that there was resistance to paying the $500,000 that was said to cost to put a day shift crew on at the Kingston station. Why are our councillors, directors of this local council body corporate, going to the press to advocate for the big end of town, who obviously haven't been pulling their weight?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Biggins. The concept of the draft bill and the fire services levy that the state government has recently released for public comment is yet to be considered by Kingborough Council. As such, we do not have a formal position as yet. We will be making one in the coming weeks in response to a submission that has been requested by the state government from all councils. I believe that we have been granted an extension across local government to be able to provide those responses, but until such time, we don't have a formal public position.
Thank you. I would add that
is it another question?
It would appear to be a good deal for Kingston, for Kingborough.
Thank you. Is there a question, Mr. Biggins? Thank you.
No further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further questions from the public gallery? If not, we'll move on. Questions on notice from the public. We had two. The first one is in relation to enforcement of illegal tree removal from Vishnu Pralalad at an officer's response from Mr. Basham. The second one in relation to stormwater at Elwood Court from Ms. Joanne Kell and an officer response from Mr. Reeve. Turning now to page 3, questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My first question is about the Council's special committees. I'm just wondering how often are the terms of reference for the special committees reviewed when they're next up for review? And the thrust of my question is that, for example, if people wanted to have a new committee, so either to reinstate the Tracks and Trails Committee or perhaps to add a new Biodiversity and Citizen Science Advisory Committee, what would be the process for doing that, for either adding new committees or reviewing the current ones?
Mr. Smee can assist us with that.
Through you, Mayor, there's no prescribed review period in relation to terms of reference. They're reviewed as and when required, you know, when legislation might change or when there's a specific issue that comes up that does require a review, or they may be instigated from the committees themselves. So they do get reviewed from time to time, but not in the same prescribed time period as our policies are, for example. In relation to the second half of your question, establishment of a new committee would be a decision for council to make, and obviously the mechanism for that would be a notice of motion or a council report from staff indicating that there was a requirement to do so.
Thank you. That's very helpful. And through you, Mayor, in terms of setting... So I understand that to get a new committee, you could just have a notice of motion. Has there ever been any kind of review into the within the terms of reference to put in some kind of 360 process where we could test whether or not the committee members are getting out of it what they want, the community's getting out of it what they want, and the council's getting out of it what they want in terms of, I don't know, like metrics for success or KPIs or anything like that?
Not that we've done in recent years, but you may be aware that we used to have a different committee structure within council, and that was changed back in about 2014, I think, from memory, where we then just had special advisory committees with short-term ones set up as required, such as the Sport and Recreation Working Group, the Multicultural Advisory Group and so on, for specific purposes. But the I find that most of the committees themselves tend to look at what they're doing, what they're achieving, how they could do better, and that's really up to the chair of each of those committees to initiate that. And certainly with the Disability Access Inclusion Advisory Committee that I've been chair of for the last 10 years, we will take stock at the end of the year, look at what we've achieved, look at any gaps that we have in terms of skills of the committee members, and set ourselves an agenda for the following year as to what we hope to achieve, and I'm sure other committees do the same. And I even know that the Kimberley Community Forum, for example, have been having that discussion amongst themselves. So I think these things don't necessarily always have to be mandated, but, you know, can still operate effectively within, I guess, some leadership from the chairs of each of those.
Fantastic. Thank you, Mayor. And, yeah, that's really helpful, because I was trying to tease out the idea that, you know, if there was to be a citizen science committee, an advisory committee, for example, they could actually help council with a lot of that, you know, biodiversity, citizen science kind of projects. So that's very encouraging to hear. My next question is about illegal tree removal investigations, just broadly. When allegations of illegal tree removal are raised with council, how frequently are investigated matters left unresolved? Like, how often is it that we'll just get an unsolved mystery of an illegal tree, roughly, removed?
I think it's probably fairly common, because it's very difficult without hard evidence. I know from speaking to council staff in the past that it's very difficult to get a conviction in relation to that, and I know I can think of numerous cases we've had over the years where, for example, down at Kettering, I think, where there were some trees, was either Woodbridge or Kettering, I think maybe Kettering, where there's some trees that were had copper nails put in them, which then they subsequently died. I don't think we ever caught the perpetrators of that. Likewise, we've had other areas, and it generally does tend to happen in coastal areas where perhaps somebody's view is being blocked, unfortunately, and they take it upon themselves to take matters into their own hands. I don't know if we've got data on the sort of clear-up rate, whether any staff... Ms Quinn, can you add anything? Or Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. I don't have data to hand. We could certainly get it, but the Mayor is exactly right that whilst these are investigated, it is very difficult. When we do have success, it's generally because a member of the community has video footage or was there at the time and does a stat deck. So we need, of course, to have full proof of evidence before to be able to move these things forward, and that is where the difficulty is being able to get that evidence.
Thank you. Just two quick follow-ups, please, Mayor. So is Council aware of any practices in other jurisdictions where illegal tree removal has been successfully reduced through either education campaigns, incentives for tree maintenance or harsher penalties?
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. The only rule, I think Kingborough is quite at the forefront in Tasmania at least with our unauthorised vegetation removal signage that we do put up where vegetation's been removed illegally on public land, often for view, and so other councils have since taken up that. On the mainland there are definitely much stronger and higher fines than there are in Tasmania. Yeah.
Thank you. And yeah, because this was what's alerted me to this is the alleged illegal tree removal on Groningen Road, and that was kind of left unsolved, as is mentioned in the agenda. One of Australia's most comprehensive tree protection laws is on the books in the ACT. It's the ACT Tree Protection Act 2005, and it states in its objectives that its objects are to protect individual trees and the urban forest and to promote community appreciation of trees. Has our council considered advocating for some state-based tree protections?
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor, over the years we absolutely have. So when we first looked at the offset, biodiversity offset policy, we worked with the state government and then decided then to work regionally within local government. So we work closely with the state government. Of course, it's the state government who ultimately determine the planning schemes, and so that's their way. But compared to on the mainland, the theme is that state governments do have stronger vegetation controls than there are in Tasmania.
Thank you. Yeah, in ACT under that legislation, it was fines of $44,000 for individuals and up to $220,000 for corporations. Finally, may I please have an update on the Kingborough Council's plans regarding a street tree strategy? I recall $75,000 allocated previously for some work tangential to that or in relation to that, so I'm interested in a status update on the street tree strategy.
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. We've just recently received a tree canopy mapping that a consultant, GeoNeon, has completed for Kingborough Council, and so that provides the data that we require to complete the strategy. The strategy is being drafted up by scoped by an internal working group, and it'll go to a consultant and is due for completion at the end of the financial year.
Great, thank you. That's all for me. Thank you, Mayor.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a favourite question. An update on the Woodbridge Hill Road speed reduction submission, please. I think they've got the Woodbridge community has their AGM coming up, or it's coming up very soon. It'd be great to have an answer for them.
Through you, Mayor. It's certainly with the Transport Commission. I've yet to officially hear anything, but bearing in mind that they recommend that we put in the lower speed limit of 60 kilometres an hour, so I'm not expecting there to be any issues.
Through you, Mayor, is there any way that we could follow up soon to find out exactly what the outcome
is? I'll chase it up tomorrow.
Great, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And just another question. It's come to my awareness that people who are living in sort of like a townhouse type subdivision or perhaps a unit subdivision are having to get a private bin collection service because evidently the council Veolia service can't pick the number of bins up that end up on the road, and I'm just wanting some clarification in regards to that if the those developments are having to get a private collection service.
Yep, Miss, you'll notice that in some of the development applications that go before us when there's multi-unit developments, that Ms Tyler Morgan provides some additional information.
Through you, Mayor, without knowing which property you're referring to, I can't provide a specific answer. Yes, there are some developments that require private waste collection because of the limitations of road frontage for the bins to be collected and the issues that arise from that, and also sometimes from commercial mixed-use developments that might have private waste collection as well. So it depends on the nature of the development and the constraints of the site as well as to whether it's private or not. Typically, there'd be a Part 5 agreement placed on that property so that it's very transparent for people to be aware of the obligations that will occur should they purchase the property.
Thank you. And just wondering then about, you know, we'd love a 100% uptake of FOGO, the limitations, I guess, in regards to implementing that FOGO service to these types of developments.
Anyone? Mr. Reeve?
Through you, Mayor, I guess if you look at something like FOGO there, bearing in mind there's a council resolution, which is basically an opt-in resolution currently on the books there. It may be something that gets reviewed at a later date, but that's probably the biggest barrier to getting 100% take-up. We do get a good take-up in Kimber in terms of FOGO, but getting to 100% is unlikely without actually, I guess, changing the criteria we actually use. Certainly when it comes to particular developments, there is that problem in terms of real estate outside the front of properties there. So when you're getting units with multiple bins, it can make it very difficult for access on the days that the garbage or FOGO or recycling are being picked up. And that's one of the reasons why we look at private services for those particular developments.
Thank you. And so if people living in those, could they organise a private service for FOGO as well?
They can.
Yep. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Any further questions? No, if not, we'll go to just before, we'll just do the last couple of sort of administrative type things before we move on to the officers' reports. We're on page 3 still, questions on notice from councillors. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from councillors. Then skipping over to page 12, petitions still being actioned, there are no petitions still being actioned. And at the time the agenda was compiled, there were no petitions that had been received. So that still leaves us on page 12 with the item that we've brought forward. So it's item 16.1, modification to the biodiversity offset policy 6.1, with a recommendation on page 16. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Gladewright and a seconder in Councillor Midgley.
Move to discuss.
I've got a procedural motion to move to discuss. Councillor Richardson with a seconder in Councillor Antoli. All those in favour to discuss the matter?
Aye.
Against?
No.
A show of hands is required, please. All those in favour of discussing? Is Councillors Antoli, Dean, Bain, Richardson, Street and Reet. And those against is Councillors Cordova, Midgley and Gladewright. The motion is carried. So we are in discussion. Who would like to kick it off? Councillor Gladewright, you've still got your light on? No.
I'm happy to kick it off.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you for my colleagues for allowing us to discuss. We've received a number of correspondence over the past 12 months from the Tasmanian Planning Commission regarding concerns that they have had with the amendments to the biodiversity offset policy. We voted on whether or not we would go to public exhibition. Council staff advised that we didn't need to. I recall in that vote that I voted against not going. The TPC knocked it on the head and said we need to go, so I feel vindicated on that. In the process, a lot of submissions were handed in. Some of those, the TPC has asked us to actually address a number of submissions. There were four in particular that were late submissions that council said they did not want to address, and they gave their reason, a reason I don't support. And we've also received now this letter on the 11th of October that continues to show concern from the TPC about the biodiversity offset policy, and they've made it clear to us, and we've made it clear back to them, that they do not have the authority to tell us what to do with our policy, and we're going to stand on that authority to resist any inferences from them that the policy has problems, and they have more than inferred that the biodiversity policy has problems. But we have to submit to their authority over the amendments. My concern is that there's enough of a paper trail between us and the Tasmanian Planning Commission that the biodiversity policy, which was enacted after the state government removed biodiversity offsets through the tree scheme to permit the widening of urban development and what's called peri-development. My concern is that we went on and did a bit of a grab for it without going to community consultation, and it's been a constant source of pain, upset, hurt, offence amongst the community. It's been a source of concern for me that the biodiversity offset policy is probably on tenuous legal ground, and I'd like us to pause the motion today until we've got an independent review on these chain of events to see whether or not we have the authority to take these fees under our title as council. So there's a push to make the biodiversity offset policy comply with a new TPS. If we don't succeed in making these amendments satisfactory to the TPC, it will not become a part of the TPS and it will be defunct. So why is there so much concern from the TPS, sorry, from the Tasmanian Planning Commission about this entire policy more than anything we put forward? So my concern is around whether or not a pause should be placed on this motion, an independent review done to look at the chain of events and determine whether or not we have legal ground.
Thank you. I'm going to just, there are a couple of things that you highlighted in that I'd like to ask Mr. Stander to respond to in relation to. You mentioned the late submissions that had been received and suggested that they didn't want to be considered, but I think that I understand that that's not the case. So, and can I just preface my remarks by saying the TPC are quite within their rights to come back to us after this and say we don't believe this policy, we don't accept these amendments. That's their, you know, if they believe that the policy is not legal in any way or anything like that, they have the capacity to do that. They have not indicated anything like that to us. My reading of it is that they have done their due diligence, as they should, in questioning our council representatives at the hearing about some of the submissions that have been put in and those and the answers that were provided. There were a lot of representations that were provided to the public exhibition process that didn't relate to the amendment to put this into the planning scheme. But there was back in on the 15th of May when council did consider this issue, there was a comprehensive document that was provided to councillors at that time, which showed a response, despite the fact that those issues that were raised were outside of the scope of the amendment that was the purpose of the consultation. Council staff did, out of courtesy, respond to those, prepare a document to provide a response to those issues. So I wouldn't like it to be inferred that council staff have not done their roles in any way and their jobs, because they've certainly gone above and beyond in terms of responding to matters that were outside of the scope of that. So having said that, I'd just like to ask Mr. Stander to perhaps address a couple more of those issues.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm correct, and I'm most probably not going to repeat everything you just said, but I think that provides a bit of a background as to what happened, and maybe for the benefit for the members of the public, I might just quickly just step us through some of the steps that we undertook during this process. So in 2022, Council initiated the planning scheme, and then that was followed with a public consultation process. During that process, we've received 13 submissions in relation to the two policies that we put on our exhibition as part of this amendment, and then we brought those submissions back to council, and council officers' response addressed all the concerns, whether they were in relation to the planning scheme or the policies itself. We've provided comments on those, and we forward those off to the Commission. Just before the hearing that we had on the 5th of November, a further four submissions were submitted to the Commission directly. General or standard protocol is that the Commission would generally ask Council to respond to those submissions. They didn't. So on the day of the hearing, we were made aware of those additional submissions, and as part of that procedure, I specifically requested the opportunity to respond to those submissions because we didn't have the opportunity to look through those and to provide a written response. And that's exactly what happened. The Commission, after the hearing, they provided Council with the opportunity to respond to those submissions. We looked at the submissions and we decided to take a slightly different approach and to address some of the criteria that the Commission presented to Council during the hearing. So maybe also just to the benefit of members of the public, we as Council didn't have a set of criteria to assess the planning scheme amendment against prior to the hearing. So on the day of the hearing, the Commission provided us with six criteria which they wanted Council officers to respond on. And so what we did was, in response to the Commission's request to address some of those late submissions, we went through those items and put it in writing. And we did it for a number of reasons. We put it in writing for transparency, but the protocol at the Commission is also to put it on their website, and they generally inform submitters then to say, well, you've got a further opportunity to respond to those items. So we've provided a response to those assessment criteria, and the Commission didn't ask us any further questions on that. So I guess that brings the question whether the submission thought it was whether those criteria were satisfactorily addressed, or I guess they also had the opportunity to ask for the questions they didn't. Instead, what they did was they responded back to Commission, to the Council, and asked us to undertake some minor modifications to both the planning scheme amendment and the policy, which is, I have to acknowledge, is an interesting process. However, this is the way the Commission chooses to proceed with this planning scheme amendment and the policy. I guess the only thing that I'll add to that is it's correct, the Commission can't instruct Council to make changes to its own policy. It can only suggest some changes, whereas the planning scheme amendment, that is totally in the hands of the Commission. They have to instruct Council to undertake those changes. They could potentially make some of those changes themselves, and they often do. It's not uncommon for the Commission to ask Council to update the planning scheme amendment and then before they make a further, their decision to make further changes. So that could happen. So it's quite a complicated process, and I do appreciate if you don't deal with these planning scheme amendments on a daily basis, it might seem as if due process is not followed, but there is a process, and I think what we've done from officer level is to make sure there's a track record of the way we responded to, the questions from the Commission, but also to make sure that when we provide those responses that they're made publicly available for everybody to view.
Thank you, Mr. Stander, for your response. I understand you're probably referring to the letter that either yourself or a colleague wrote to the Commission on the 22nd of September in 2023. The Commission asked you to respond to four particular submissions from Robertson, Biggins, Landon and Kaplinski, and forgive me if I pronounce Kaplinski wrong. I don't understand why we would avoid responding.
No,
the reason was that...
We didn't avoid responding.
Yes.
Mr. Stander has just indicated he didn't want to give a response on the fly and so was asked to provide an opportunity to respond.
In the letter, it actually clearly states we won't be responding. So did you say that you responded thereafter, after sending the letter to the Commission?
Mr. Stander.
Sri Mayor, correct. So the letter that you're referring to is the one that is dated, I
just have to check 22nd. The date.
The date is 22nd of September.
Correct. So that letter, we've indicated that we didn't choose to further respond to the late submissions, and the reason for that was those submissions were discussed during the hearing. And we also felt that some of the commentary that were made in those submissions were previously addressed as part of a report to council. So we didn't feel the need to provide further comment on that. However, we did feel it was appropriate to address the assessment criteria, which was essentially 90% of the topic of the hearing. So we felt it's more appropriate to address that than to address the submissions. I think we got to a point that we agree there might be differences in opinion on some of those submissions, and we thought it was more productive to address the issues that the Commission raised during that hearing. And some of those issues, even though they don't directly address the late submissions, they touch on those issues without specifically referring to them.
If I may, thank you.
Councillor Antolli.
Sorry?
Councillor Antolli.
Thank you, yes. Sorry, I thought you said something else. I don't understand why we would, why the Tasmanian Planning Commission would ask us to respond to those submissions and we don't, but then afterwards we decide to from a different angle. Why didn't we just decide then and there to respond back? I just
don't.
If I can just finish, it gives the impression to the public that their responses, which may have been slightly off topic about the policy and not about the amendments, that their concerns are not valid. And it then they passionately spoke at the Commission, and John Ramsay, the Commissioner, made it very clear that they can't force Council to change our documents, but they made it very clear in their commentary to those people that they're not happy with the process that we followed. That the process we followed should have involved public consultation, and they made it clear that the avoidance of going to public consultation on just the amendments alone would prejudice the process. And we were advised by Council that it was immaterial to go ahead with such administrative changes, whereas the Commission and some councillors knew that those administrative changes were concrete and materially relevant to the validity of the policy itself, to which it was attached to at the beginning. So my concern is that we have a bunch of community members that feel the policy is illegitimate. I'm concerned the biodiversity policy is illegitimate and does not have proper legal standing. And the Tasmanian Planning Commission is very concerned about the way we have tried to push this through. So the fear that I have is that we are standing on rocky ground. By all means, go ahead.
Mr. Stander, feel free to reply. I didn't get a question in that, but...
Given this is a discussion, it's not question and answer. We have a slightly less formal way of handling it. So,
through you, Mayor, that's okay. I'll find a question in there, and I do appreciate the feedback. And look, I can see how the community might view this. I think, as somebody that attended that hearing, during the hearing, the submitters all got the opportunity to speak, and it was an unusual meeting where council officers didn't have the opportunity to respond to submissions. Late submissions prior to the hearing. So the request from the Commission to ask for further commentary was on my request. So I did ask the Commission during the hearing. We've received the late submissions. We didn't get the opportunity to respond to that. Can we have the opportunity to respond to those? After having a look at those submissions, and I know how it might appear that we're trying to disregard those comments, it is certainly not the case. It's more a case that the Commission's received those submissions. They can consider those submissions. We feel like we have addressed those submissions as part of our previous responses. In addition to that, we felt it was more appropriate to actually go through the assessment criteria that the Commission provided and to touch on some of those submissions. So even though the submissions don't specifically refer to a specific person or a letter that they wrote, it generally addresses the concerns from community. And if you look at the criteria that the Commission provided, it kind of addresses some of those concerns. So the Commission held the hearings to generally get feedback from the community on those issues that they've raised. They formulated into a series of 6 questions which they asked council officers to respond to during the hearing. We didn't have the opportunity to put that in writing, and we felt it was appropriate. So I do appreciate that it might look like we're trying to dismiss those submissions. It's certainly not the case. It's due protocol for the Commission to consider those, regardless of whether council respond to it or not. It is a process where the Commission haven't really indicated to us whether they're going to support the planning scheme amendment. I guess what they've done is they've given us the opportunity to say, look, council, we've considered your submission, your planning scheme amendments. We've listened to the community. There's a couple of things that we need to understand how this policy is going to fit in with the planning scheme. I guess that the one point that I really want to stress is that the planning scheme at the moment allows for the application of offsets. The current planning scheme allows for it, and the future planning scheme will also allow for the application of offsets. The biodiversity offset is not the mechanism to ask for those offsets requirements. It is merely there to guide the process, so it helps council to apply those provisions consistently. So, and that's the thing that the Commission wanted to know during the hearing. How does your policy fit in with the planning scheme? They didn't necessarily look at, is this the right thing to do, yes or no? It was more a case of going through the motion, listening to members of the community's concerns, and then to look at the more technical aspects of how it would fit into that. So I guess it is interesting to me that the Commission didn't ask us to further provide information further to our response, or got back to us and asked, can you please respond to those 4 further submissions? They accepted our response.
Councillor Antolli.
Thank you very much. And just to make it clear, this is not a personal thing with you, Mr. Stander. You and I have had conversations in private in which I've told you I really respect you and your skill set. It's not about you as an individual. This is about, in my opinion, the advice that we've received from council staff. And in my opinion, the advice that we received on this matter has been substandard. And it's been proven to be substandard with the way that we approached the changes to the amendment. And the advice we received not to go to community consultation, which was knocked on the head. I'm aware that this letter that we received on the 11th from the Commission was not what we wanted to hear, and it took council staff a bit by surprise. And there was probably some concern about what would happen.
Councillor Antolli, you're making assumptions now about what... I'm going to pull you up on that because you're kind of veering off topic. You're making assumptions about how you think the council staff think about a letter they got. You're not in their hands. Let's stick to the facts. I have had conversations
with council staff on the matter. It's not an assumption. I'm sorry to correct you on that.
Please be very careful of the words that you're using.
And colleagues have had conversations with executives in this room, and there was genuine concern about what council's response would be to this letter.
Well, unless you can provide me with some details, it's not my assumption at all. Okay. I will take it on your explanation, but can we just be mindful of the language that we use and the reflections that we make on not only each other as colleagues, but also on staff, please.
I'm being very mindful, and that's why I'm colouring my language by saying this is not a personal thing.
Thank you. I appreciated that. I'm just, as we move into the next speaker, I'm just asking us all to be mindful of that and stick to the matter at hand and not guess what people might think or ask what they might have thought or hypotheticals.
So well, I backed up why I said what I said.
Thank
with evidence.
Thank you.
So I don't believe I said anything that was incorrect or too far. You just assumed it was, and I'm sorry, I believe you were wrong, Mayor.
Thank you. I'll accept that. Thank you.
The concern that I have, that a lot of, that a number of individuals have around this table, council individuals, is that this policy, the offset system, in 2009, the Labor government decided to remove it because it was an impediment to urban and peri-urban development growth. It was then latched onto by council to continue. And I believe it is a continuing impediment to urban development and growth at a time when we are at the biggest crisis, I believe, in that respect since World War II in this state. And I believe that the biodiversity offset policy creates an enormous impost and a slowing down of the process on people to build a house for themselves and their family. And I don't see why it actually furthers the cause of what we're trying to do here to create a more cohesive community and to solve a housing crisis. So I would like to hand over to others to maybe ask some questions as well or to discuss, but that's my summary of the issue. And I'm trying to plead with my colleagues. There is something wrong with this policy. The TPC is alluding that there is stuff wrong with the policy. The fact that it is such it's a financial impost on the DA of an individual, and it never went to public consultation in its 20 years of history. Only amendments did. And whatever happened in 2020, some PSA happened in 2020, it was ratified in 21, in the middle of COVID. I hardly call that consultation.
Councillor Dean, I think I had next on my list. I don't see any other lights on.
Yeah, look, just a few clarifying questions for me, really. And just to very briefly pick up on Councillor Antoli's comment there, is it correct that... would it be the view of staff that because the TPC developed those six assessment criteria, that they created those because they had grave concerns about the policy?
Ms. Tyler-Mall.
Through you, Mayor, there's basically no framework really for them to make a decision. So during the hearing, or prior to the hearing, they came up with the six questions to be able to do an assessment against. Those six criteria could be applied to any planning scheme amendment. So it's no indication at all that they have grave concerns. The inference that that is an indication of grave concerns, I think, is misled. If you read them with a clear mind of that it can be applied to any amendment, you can see that it makes sense. You would ask those questions along the way. I think it's better practice for the TPC to have that because it's just absent in the Act or the scheme for them to assess it against. So I think it's a useful tool that they've created.
And then just...
Councillor Dean.
Sorry, just the questions I had then. When was the last review of our biodiversity offset policy?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. It was in August 2022.
And was there any community consultation that took place as part of that, or was that just an internal staff review?
Yeah, so in the 2022 review, the biodiversity offset policy went to internal peer review, so it went to technical consultation with ecological consultants who use the policy regularly with council to provide feedback on how it's working, so how their clients find it and how they find it to operate. And it also went to the Government and Forest Practices Authority, and we included, they both put in a submission, and we included that in the review.
Sorry, just to clarify, there wasn't any kind of public consultation then at August?
No, the most recent public consultation has occurred as part of this planning scheme amendment when we received the 13 submissions.
Okay, but it's fairly clear in the report that that public consultation wasn't actually factored around the policy itself, that was really around the amendment. So has there been, I suppose what I'm trying to get at, has there been an opportunity for the public to contribute or give their feedback aside from this into the biodiversity offset policy?
Ms. Quinn.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. The policy has been advertised as part of the last two planning scheme amendments. So back in 2015 and in 2020 as well, okay. Which is similar to a lot of policies.
Okay. If we were to think, as I think Councillor Antolio alluded to at the beginning of this discussion, that there could be some kind of pausing or deferral, if Council were to seek another review, what would probably be the most appropriate course of action to review the biodiversity offset policy?
Just to clarify, when you're saying seek a review from whom?
To review the policy itself holistically, either via the community as well as internally. Or, as Councillor Antelli alluded to, seek legal advice around the legalities of the policy.
Can I just, before I ask staff to respond, we just need to bear in mind when we're talking about this that the policy itself doesn't mandate whether offsets are charged or not. Offsets are able to be, biodiversity offsets are able to be charged under the planning scheme that we operate under. The policy is just the framework or the tool, if you like, for carrying that out with transparency so that people can see on what basis the decisions are being made. So I'm just offering that by way of explanation as we continue the discussion so that it can be helpful to separating out. I know it's a bit complicated because we've got the two issues. We've got the planning scheme amendment and we've got the policy that we're now discussing. So the policy, even if we pause that, does not stop biodiversity offsets being charged, if required, during that time because they're allowed under the planning scheme. I don't know who would like to add something to that. Ms Tullamore?
Through you, Mayor, yes, the Mayor's comments are correct about that the planning scheme, which was written by the state government, not by Kingborough, does allow those offset policies. It's written in there. And if this if the decision of the Chamber was to put it on hold, the offset policy already exists in the planning scheme, so it will continue. So on one hand, it's okay either way for both parties that are interested, I guess. But we do need to get back to the Planning Commission, and the Planning Commission will make a decision about whether it's incorporated or not. So if there are such grave concerns, as suggested, then surely they will refuse the amendment and we will move on with that decision, as we do with any TP decision. They may choose to put it in the planning scheme regardless of whether the Chamber decides to make the minor modifications to the policy or not, or they may make some other sort of varying decision in between that. So I guess it's important to understand the TPC is going to make the decision. We're more than halfway through the process. This is just the post-hearings. The hearings were there to be heard. They haven't come back. The back and forth between the tribunal, the TPC and council is not unusual at all. Most hearings will have a back and forth. They will have correspondence. So the letter that we got that have been referred to is not unusual at all. And it's just for them to provide better clarification, which is a good thing. And it's a better for us to not do things on the fly. We're representing the community in the broader. Yes, there's 13 people out of the whole community that have opposed it. And that's an important part of the process, and it's good for those people to speak up and be part of that process. But if we do things on the fly, that's not very well considered. We risk making bad judgment or bad call on the day, and that's really the reason to go back and ask for it. Can we make the latest submission? So that's what can happen out of it. We still need to get back to them. We could potentially ask them for a further extension of time for the Chamber to further consider. They may say no, and then just make the decision one way or the other. Obviously, for those who are, have concerns with it, if they refuse it, well, then that's put to bed. If they approve it, then it's answering the questions about is it legal, can you do it, is it right, keeping in mind that they've made numerous decisions using this policy through Section 43 applications, which go to the TPC. Section 43 is an application to amend the planning scheme and a development application at the same time. And certainly the TASCAT, or formerly RAMPAT, have made numerous decisions with the biodiversity offset policy included, and it has never been thrown out, pulled out, adjusted or anything like that. So just to answer some of those, or those concerns about it doesn't exist, you can't use it, the legalities, the need for review. Yes, you can review it as a policy to decide, as a council to decide what the content is, but the legalities side around it, well, that's already been tested in the tribunal, which is a legal tribunal, and TPC already. So I think that answers a few of the questions.
Councillor Dean.
Yeah, sorry, I think I may have not worded that question very. I really appreciate those lengthy responses. My question really was, moving forward, if the council were to be of the opinion that it needed to review this policy, the biodiversity offset policy,
yep,
what would need to happen? That was the simple question.
A notice of motion.
A notice of motion. So the policy can be reviewed, as I'm just clarifying, the policy can be reviewed again. It would just need a notice of motion,
yep,
from
like
council.
Any,
so it is,
yep,
possible. And
same
now
with
is,
any policy.
So yep, given the response from staff just then, now is probably not potentially the moment, if I'm reading what you're saying correctly, and maybe once this is passed through, there's always the opportunity to have a notice of motion if it was council's wish. That is all I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah. Sorry. I didn't get that in the nuance of your question either, so I went down a rabbit hole as well. I'm not trying to draw this out. Ms. Tolemore, you've got something to add?
Just that, yes, you do notice motion, as the Mayor said, but be aware that for it to be part of the planning scheme, it has to go through the planning scheme amendment process all over again, and the TPC would have to consider your new revised version and the appropriateness of that. So it's not just a given at the notice of motion.
Next, I've got Councillor Richardson.
Thank you. I'm a little concerned that we keep using the fact that the TPC only puts forward these minor amendments. They can change it whenever they like. They can say no. It feels like the wording that we're putting around it is ultimately it's up to the TPC whether this happens or not, and they have full control. But when we sent the letter on the 22nd of September, we made sure that we put a paragraph in there saying that the Commission can only consider the issues around the updates in the policy, and they cannot consider the policy themselves as these are Council documents. So is that a furphy then to say that the TPC has control when we're saying here's our document, you can't make comment on that document, you can only make comment on it if the full stops are in the right place?
Ms. Tolemore.
Through you, Mayor, I've forgotten which part was the furphy, but no, they don't have the power to change the council policy.
Right.
But they won't endorse something to go in the scheme that would be contradictory of the scheme. So the minor amendments we refer to, that are referred to in the report, are effectively suggestions, so they're not mandating them. It's not the decision hasn't been made to say, we approve this and you must do this. They've given direction to seek approval, which didn't necessarily have to come to the Chamber. We chose to bring it to the Chamber because it's reasonable transparency for the community, because there's community interest in it. It could have been done under delegation to, yes, allow that that policy change.
Okay, so the suggestions that the TPC have made don't have to be incorporated into the policy?
Ms. Tolemore.
That's correct.
Okay.
Councillor Richardson.
Yep. And then the suggestions that they make don't have to come to us.
Well, like what Ms. Tolemore was saying is that it could have gone. There could have been a response to the TPC via delegated authority.
Right.
So the general manager would have had authority to be able to respond.
Okay.
But in the interests of continuing this process publicly, it was brought to the Chamber so that we could have this discussion and then respond to the TPC.
Okay. Right. So it. We don't have to agree with their suggestions. They don't have to come to us to be approved. So the story about the TPC having all of the control doesn't seem to be fitting with this process, where we don't have to listen to them. We don't have to get councillors' approval to make these amendments. We can just do it if we want to do it, because it's our document. It's under common seal. It's our document.
Ms. Tolemore is going to respond to that, I can see.
Through you, Mayor. Okay, so we've got two things. We've got the policy, which Council wrote themselves and can make changes to it, make decisions about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the incorporated documents, which is effectively, well, it's not even a sentence, it's a line at the back of the planning scheme that makes reference to Council Policy 6.10, Biodiversity Offset Policy, dated, and it currently is 2016. We're changing the year, reference the policy to make it applicable to the right one. So, yes, they do hold the power as to whether the 2009... November 31?
22.
To say that the 2022 policy replaces the 2016 policy. So they have the power to say whether you can use the updated one that has already been through the chamber and been approved, or whether they say no and you stick to your 2016 one, which doesn't have a huge difference. It's just the amendments that we made previously. So yes, they do hold the power as to whether it gets updated in the planning scheme.
In the planning scheme.
But they don't have the power to change the actual policy content itself. But they have made, through the discussions and the submissions, it would be clearer and better if you change and or is full stop, which we're fine with. As officers, we think, sure, they're improvements, no harm, doesn't change your intent, doesn't change anything. If they were turning around saying, OK, change it from a $5,000 offset to a $15,000 offset, we would say that's changing the intent. Right. Or if they said it applies to non-native trees, not just native trees, that'd be changing the intent, and we would say you don't have the power to do that.
OK. So
they do hold the power to change the scheme, they don't hold the power to change the policy. If the policy doesn't change to the new one, we just stick with what we've got today.
Right, so they have no power, really. They can't influence and they can't make comment on whether they think the policy is heavy-handed or its application is heavy-handed or it's too light or whatever the content is. They have no power to comment on the content of that policy.
Yeah.
So we're telling them what the policy is.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor. They don't have the power in this instance of the Planning Scheme Amendment number 3... to change that. They do have the power when they make decisions under Section 43A for others. So in terms of do they think it's good or valid, that has been tested because they've made decisions in the past. This particular hearing, to put it in, you're correct. They can't really talk about whether they think it's a good policy or not a good policy, but they did have it for previous hearings, as in when we did the wedge, for example, which is the, for those who don't know, is the site opposite Bunnings that has had multiple development proposals and approvals on it. They would have had the power in that because they had to make the decision on the conditions of the permit. If they didn't think it was valid, they wouldn't have put them on because it's their decision.
Councillor Richardson.
Digest.
Mr. Stander looks like very keen to say something. Mr. Stander.
It feels like a while since I've said anything, so I think the only thing that I'll add to that is council's the custodian of the policy. It's our policy. The commission can suggest some changes, how the policy could fit into the planning scheme, so they could make some suggestions. It's up to council to decide whether we want to make those changes or not. The planning scheme amendment itself, that's the commission. They decide on the planning scheme amendment and so forth. So to answer your question, if the commission had concerns about the, let's call it the content of the policy, is that the right thing to do, yes or no? The commission can, I guess, through the hearings and a response to council, and in response to the submissions, actually mention their thoughts on it, but ultimately they're not going to make a decision on the council's policy. So they might actually indicate, and we're not there yet, so they haven't made a decision. So generally when they make a decision, they would write a letter to council and indicate whether they support the amendment, yes or no, and generally they would also highlight the matters that they consider as part of the hearings, and that sometimes might go a little bit outside the scope of the planning scheme. So we're at an awkward stage at this point in time where the Commission haven't really indicated to us whether they support it or not, but they've asked us, if you would like us to consider updating this policy in the planning scheme, would you please make the following changes? So Council can respond back and say, sorry, we don't want to do that. You make a decision based on what you've got, but I think that is just the appropriate way that the Commission operates. They always try and involve Council in their final decisions, and it's also to be transparent to the community members out there. Everything's in writing. We've given you the opportunity to speak. Do you want to provide further comments? Yes, no.
So picking up on
Councillor Richardson.
Thank you. So picking up on Ms. Tullamore's point before about having to go back through this process, if we were going to get a fully and truly independent review done on this policy, now would be the time to do it. Before we finalise these amendments and have it go back to the TPC, we'd be better off to ask for the extension, get the review done, and go back with the ones.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, you could possibly. The TPC obviously has the power to say no, so they can just make the decision, but I don't think necessarily you'd be at detriment, because it's already in the scheme already. So if they said, no, you're not having extension, we're going to make the decision, it's going to go one or two ways. They refuse it, you're happy. Sorry, those who aren't in support of it are happy because it didn't go through the amendment, but it does still exist, so be mindful of that. I'm just trying to be clear to not think that it's just going to go away. Or they say, yes, we'll give you the extension, and then you go out in policy. It may very well then just overcomplicate it with the public, because then you're running a whole process within a process.
Within a process.
Within a process, which I think could be quite confusing. Sorry?
I think the public are probably smart enough to follow along.
Let's not debate whether the public are.
That's not suggesting that they wouldn't, but certainly when we do, because it's not just those who are involved now, it's the broader community again. When we go out again, it's confused. The same as when we have the discussions about having consultation about the planning scheme before we're ready to do it and things like that. So yes, those people who are really keyed in, sure, they're going to be able to follow along, but we've got to think of the broader population, not just those 13 people, so I think that's important. But it, to us, to as officers and how it operates, it doesn't really matter to us if you choose to defer it to make the review. That's up to you. It's up to the councillors to decide that, because we have something in and we don't have a big gap at the minute, so we don't have an issue there. And that's just being completely frank and honest. So I have no, as Manager of Development Services, I have no particular protest if you wish to do that, but I would be mindful of overcomplicating it. Are you going to achieve it? Needing to consider whether reviews have already been done and keeping in mind, has this actually come up and been faulted to date? No, it hasn't. There's been decisions made on it. So,
yeah, but it is seriously affecting members of the public who have to deal with this policy. I know we've been told by staff that it's a wonderful policy and nobody's against it, but the reality is when you go out there and talk to people, mm-hmm. it's devastating people.
Mm-hmm.
And I would certainly quantify that with to not say... All people say, everyone's saying, to not get caught up on that, everyone is saying whether it's a select few that have had a bad situation. And I think that's a really important thing. And to also to think what the benefits and the purpose of the policy are when the council, which I wasn't here for, neither were many of you, when it was put into place, the purpose and intent of that and what it achieved. So don't just... it needs to be on balance of what it's achieving... And who it's affecting, agreed, and it being part of cost of development. They're all things which, as a group of councillors, you would need to balance up and consider and give due weight to both sides of the story.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Councillor Richardson, anything
that's all.
Further?
That's all.
Further discussion? From I'm going to go to anyone who hasn't spoken first so we can share it around. Councillor Cordova? Have you spoken already?
Thanks, Mayor. Not yet. And just to clarify, I guess, because we're in discussion, I assume it means that there's a kind of suspension of the regular operation of the thing, which means that I assume we can speak more than once, potentially, and
you can,
at your discretion,
but
I'm sure.
Ask sure. everyone just to be mindful of the clock ticking,
yes.
and we're still in discussion and we've got a lot more on the agenda.
Yes.
So.
Thank you, Mayor. I agree with that. And I guess I wanted to make clear, just for the public, that when you see on the agenda there, in the minutes, it'll say that who wants to move to discuss, and some people didn't and some people did. What we refer to there, this process, is where we've kind of suspended the regular meeting procedures,
yeah.
and now we're having the chance to have a chat. So it's not that we didn't want to discuss things, it's just that we wanted to continue the meeting as originally planned.
Correct.
So there has been public consultation, 13 submissions were received, and in what I want to make clear in my contribution is that there are many other policies that don't undertake endless, perpetual, ongoing consultation. I love consultation. I think the community deserves consultation, and I need to make really clear that consultation does and can and has occurred. There's 13 submissions right here. But we don't, for example, have endless public consultation on our gifts and donations policy, on our purchasing policy, on our risk management policy. We don't constantly go back and forth to the community on Kingborough Council's fraud control policy. We review those policies periodically, and that's the job of the councillors, and we engage with the experts as we have done on this policy and others. So I want to make that clear as well, that I think there are some people who, because they don't like the guts of this policy, they don't like the idea of biodiversity offsets, they therefore want to totally derail the process. And we're actually in a process where we've undertaken, we had a policy that was endorsed, we've then reviewed that policy, and then we've got the Tasmanian Planning Commission to take a look and basically offer their notes, and they've done that. And there are some who, because they don't like the policy, they want to now drive this into an endless bouncing between two mirrors in perpetuity, where you'll go to consultation and they'll ramp up a campaign to say, well, the consultation didn't have enough time for the consultation. We need more time for the consultation. We need more consultation. And the outcome of the consultation will be, we need more consultation. And so we'll extend the consultation period, we'll re-embark on the TPC process, and we'll go on and on again. And that does serve the purpose of the people who don't like the policy. They want to relegate this policy to purgatory, where it will never, ever be enacted. But what I'm telling my esteemed colleagues and the community is that this policy has been tested. It was endorsed by the council and it's been tested by the TPC over again. We've heard that many times tonight with Section 43, that at every opportunity the TPC, if this was, as we've heard tonight, a problematic policy or an illegal policy, or if the validity of this policy was in question, then we would have heard that. But so far, no legal expert, no planning professional has made that claim. Now, there are 13 submissions, and there are obviously some people in the community who genuinely, passionately don't like the policy. And I don't begrudge people for not liking particular policies, but I don't think it's fair to completely derail this process just because you don't like the content of the policy. And that's where I think people are getting a bit confused tonight. We have heard some... what's the term? Not allegations, but basically we've heard this idea that potentially this policy, the validity of the policy has been called into question. Has it? I mean, can I just pause to ask that question? Has the validity of this policy been called into question by the TPC or by any planning expert or legal expert?
I don't believe so, but Mr. Stander, Ms. Tullamore, Ms. Quinn, anyone?
Through you, may I answer that question? No, the Commission haven't questioned the validity. What they have questioned during hearing was to make sure that the policy can fit in with the planning scheme. And that's basically all the questions that they've asked.
Thank you. So through you, Mayor, it's very clear that that some people who don't like the policy are trying to find excuses for why the policy can't fit. But actually, the experts have told us unequivocally that the policy is fine. It's not problematic, it's not invalid, it's not illegal, it's not a problem. In fact, if anything, it's been tested a number of times by Section 43, and TASCAT and, well, what is now RAMPAT but was TASCAT, have made ample decisions based on this policy, and the policy was never thrown out. So we really need to dispel this mischaracterisation, and it really is a mischaracterisation. It's not true to say that this policy is potentially illegal. That is not true. That's misinformation. And it's really important that we are clear about what this process is. Can I just draw all of our attention to page 15 at the conclusion, 9.1. It says the purpose of this report is not to reconsider the biodiversity offset policy as previously endorsed by Council, but to consider the modifications to the policy as recommended by the Tasmanian Planning Commission. It's not fair to derail this process just because you don't like the policy. And I think that ultimately the cat was belled, actually. The cat was belled. And the reason why you know for a fact that actually this isn't about the validity of the policy or the whether it's legal or not, the reason why you know is because it was mentioned that this is actually about some people feel like a biodiversity offset creates an obstacle for them to build their house. Now, I would argue that that's not true. But nevertheless, that's what this argument is about. This argument is about that some people don't like paying $570 to offset a very high conservation value tree, and therefore they're trying to find excuses to derail this process that we've already embarked upon. So I want to draw everybody's attention to what the policy actually includes, which it's not just about financial offsets. The hierarchy, and you can read about this on page 35, goes like this. The number one priority is on-site conservation via a Part 5 agreement. The number two priority is if you can't do on-site conservation, do off-site conservation via a Part 5. And then, after that, if you can't do that, then we can talk about financial offsets and restoration, revegetation and recovery action. But this entire conversation, the oxygen, has all been taken up by some people who just don't like the idea that they have to pay anything to offset biodiversity loss in our community. That is not fair to derail this process because you don't like the policy. Because, in fact, this policy has been endorsed, it has been reviewed, it has been tested by the planning experts at the Commission, and the policy itself is perfectly fine. So if you don't like the policy, say that, but you really shouldn't send us back to committee, send us back to survey. It's like, you know, if you set up a supermarket or if you set up a shopping centre and you want to know from the community what kind of restaurants do we want in the supermarket, and you keep doing surveys until you get the answer you want. I fear that people are going to keep sending us back to public consultation, keep delaying and deferring, keep sending it back, reinstating the TPC process until they get the answer that they want. And the answer that they want is they don't like paying for biodiversity offsets. But that's not the purpose of this report. The purpose of this report was just to acknowledge those, what I consider to be, well, and the report itself considers to be, editorial changes, minor editorial changes. I mean, you can look at them on page 14. These are not controversial. There's no great conspiracy. Nobody is being silenced or suppressed. Some people don't like the policy, but the policy has been endorsed, reviewed, and tested by legal and planning experts. So there's no there. This really isn't a problem, and we should pass this motion with no further delay. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Around 6:20, I believe, when Councillor Cordova was speaking, there was mention that there was community consultation in 2022. Can anyone from council staff refresh my memory?
Point of order. Point of order on mischaracterisation. So, if I may clarify, Mayor.
Yep, Councillor Cordova on a point of order.
So the point of order is mischaracterisation. I'm being misrepresented. I didn't say that public consultation took place in 2022. I said that consultation had occurred. I didn't say that it was the public consultation. We heard extensively that these are the experts who provided the report. The council officers told us that there was the TPC submission hearings. There was the opportunity to write in submissions on the amendment, which 13 people have done. So I didn't make the claim that there was extensive public consultation. It's a very they're different things.
Okay, so you're claiming to be misrepresented. Councillor Antoli, do you withdraw that comment?
No, because actually I heard it from staff, so that's why I would like some clarification from staff. So Councillor Dean was speaking. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I actually say Councillor Cordova at 6:20? Then I do withdraw that because I don't know why I said that, and I apologise to both of you for doing a switcheroo.
I can see how you would get them mixed up.
Yeah, my apologies. I think it's because I was looking that way. I might have absorbed the wrong face into my brain, so I'll get treatment for that later.
Let's regroup. Councillor Antoli.
At around 6:20, when Councillor Dean was speaking, there was a comment made that there was some community consultation in 2022. Did I hear that right, or have I got that wrong?
Mr. Stander.
Through you, Mayor, the only consultation that occurred in relation to this policy were the consultation that's required by the Act as part of the planning scheme amendment.
And what form did that consultation take? Do you remember?
Correct. The way we need to undertake public exhibition as part of a planning scheme amendment is a notification in a newspaper. It is published on Council's website. We also have to make the documents available for people to come and view. And I believe at that point in time, we also provided some of notification in our social media, but I could be wrong in terms of that. That's most probably something for our media officer to provide, but we followed the due process as required by the Act.
And was that during the previous term of the previous council? I think it would have been because
it was early November.
It was November?
September.
Oh, in August it came up for ratification, I believe, at council, so the consultation would have had to have been before then.
Sorry, Mr. Stander.
There we go. Yeah, look, I'll go back. The policy itself, when it came to council, the policy didn't undergo consultation. The only consultation that occurred was when council initiated a planning scheme amendment to update the incorporated documents and planning scheme.
Yes.
So there were no separate consultation on the biodiversity offset policy. And maybe just to clarify, just in case I get that question, it was the same with all the previous amendments and processes. So when the planning scheme came into force in 2015, there was obviously a process during that time where the public had the opportunity to have a look at the then interim planning scheme and to have a look at all the documents that can be incorporated. So there was opportunity for people then to say, sorry, we don't want that in our planning scheme. The policy itself didn't go through a consultation by its own.
That's helpful clarification, because I, right or wrong, I got the impression that you were saying that it had received community consultation. There was a comment made, and I think it was by our manager of developmental services, that the legality of the offsets has been tested. Did I hear that right? And there's been commentary made about the TPC has said it's legal.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, there is no statement by the TPC it's legal, if that's what you're seeking me to say.
Mm.
They make decisions based on the policy and the planning scheme and what's incorporated in the planning scheme. Decisions that they have made have been included conditions specifically about the offset policy. That is what I'm making comment about.
Mm.
They are not likely to be pushed into having to make the comment directly, and no lawyer or person or body has taken it to a court of law. But it has been through the tribunal and it has been through the TPC as well.
Councillor Ntali.
Thank you. So it has been tested at tribunal, its legality, is that right?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, no, that's not what I'm saying. It's been included in planning permit applications and the decision's been made and conditions have been applied to decisions.
Mm.
So surely if you're a developer and you are facing a $50,000, $60,000 offset, potentially, that would be tested. So usually there's legal representation for those larger developments. That hasn't occurred to date. It hasn't been pushed by any legal body, person or otherwise to say that it's not legal, and surely it would be in their interest to do so if any legal representative did believe that it was not legal.
Thank you. So how do we have this assertion here from potentially yourself? You talked about the legality of it. You said it had earlier been tested. Councillor Cordova said it had been tested. Where has it been tested that it's legal, given that you've just told us at tribunal it hasn't been tested?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, it's been tested insofar as whenever you have an appeal, you have parties for and against. And they will debate the decision, they'll debate the conditions. It's due process. This is how the planning tribunal works. So if you're unhappy with the decision or conditions, then you appeal against those. So certainly there have been numerous decisions through the tribunal and the TPC that have involved this clause of the planning scheme and the policy that's associated with that.
During the TPC hearings, Dan Ford, the TPC delegate, asked, quote, when does an offset become a tax? Has the ability for the council to charge financial offsets ever been tested at the tribunal? And Kingborough Council responded, no. Is that your recollection of the event or when it happened?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, I don't have the letter in front of me, so I'm not going to answer the question to be tricked into saying the wrong answer.
I'm not trying to trick you at all.
I still stand.
I'm not trying to. No, sorry. I am not trying to trick you. I am not trying to get staff in trouble or do anything like that that would get me a misconduct charge. I am trying to test this statement made earlier that it's been tested. I'm quoting from a transcript that Dan Ford, the TPC delegate, asked, when does an offset become a tax? Has the ability for the council to charge financial offsets ever been tested at the tribunal? And Kingborough Council said no. I have a lady who was there, and there is a person in the gallery who was there at that particular meeting. So I'm not trying to make this up or trick anybody.
Ms. Tullamore.
If it's a transcript, then it's a transcript, and I don't know the context around that. I have no comment about that.
So I think what Ms. Tullamore, just if I can insert myself in this, because I feel like we're going around in circles in this exchange, what Ms. Tullamore has been trying to say is that the tribunal has previously had cases before it that have involved this amendment to the planning, or have involved the conditions around the biodiversity offset policy in terms of somebody having to pay a set amount. When those cases have gone before it, nobody has ever challenged the legality of council's power to do that, because the legislation states that the planning scheme allows biodiversity offsets to be charged. So the legality of it has not been questioned by numerous legal representatives who have come before the tribunal, or now the TPC, because there is a head of power to councils under the Local Government Act, or under the planning scheme, I should say, to charge biodiversity offsets.
Yeah, thank you for that. It's clear that when you don't have the intellectual or financial capacity to challenge the offset, it hasn't been tested. It's only tested when you challenge it and win.
Councillor Antolli, there have been numerous large developers who have been subject to charges under the biodiversity offset policy and under their conditions for a development application that have had legal representation and the capacity to challenge it if they wished to. The general manager was telling me only this afternoon of a developer who did a large-scale development here in Kingborough in recent years, who had to pay $150,000 as part of the biodiversity offset policy because of the large scale of the subdivision and the number of trees that had to be removed. And he literally sat in the general manager's office and said, let me write out the cheque now. I'm more than happy to, because I appreciate that I would have cut down trees that have significant value in this community, and I should pay for that privilege. Have been opportunities for people at a whole range of levels to question the legality of it. It has not occurred to date. And the tribunal has been using the powers under the policy and the planning scheme amendment to protect trees and get developers to pay the offsets in decisions. And Ms. Tullamore referred to one earlier in terms of the development in the area known as the Wedge, where the shopping centre is going in.
I'm not trying to go around in circles, and I don't believe quoting the TPC delegate who asked council, I'm reliably informed at that meeting was Mr. Stander and Liz Quinn and Nikki Dan Exter. And so I'm trying to be very specific, not to trick anybody,
but to
ask them whether or not the question was asked.
I appreciate that, Councillor Antolli, but I think we are going around in circles in terms of you keep challenging whether the legality has been questioned, and we've had several answers now in relation to that, so I would like to try and move on from that, because the answer that everyone here is giving you is no, it has not, but this is, people have had the opportunity to question the legality of it. Nobody to date has done that.
Okay, well, I'm giving direct quotes that council has allegedly said to the commission it hasn't been tested, yet I'm hearing people say it has been tested. And so we have a disconnect. And we have assertions here that I or others are trying to derail the process when it has been clearly stated by Councillor Richardson that there have been people devastated by this policy. And when a person, and I've had that as well, I've had a person tell me they've had to pay $40,000 in biodiversity offsets to get their DA approved, and it's ruined them. And so when someone tells you that I don't need to do a survey, I don't need numerical data to know whether or not this is a good policy or a bad policy, I think this policy stinks. I think it's a bad policy. I think it gets in the way of urban development, which is why it was removed in 2009 by the Labor government, which was a wise move. I think it financially hurts people, mum and dads, to build a property or to build their first home or to build their dream. I've been told so repeatedly. I know multiple people that have withdrawn their DA because they can't afford the biodiversity offsets. One person told me $40,000. And why should we even have it? We have never done a survey into the community about what effects this policy has had on them. Never. It's never even gone to public consultation. So I'm sharing all this because there is a real bad smell around this policy, and a policy that council endorses and wants to embed into the new scheme that hurts and devastates people financially, in my view, is a policy that needs to be killed, removed, gotten rid of. A bad memory, let's not go there again. So that is my whole point, and that's why it is so important for us to have this discussion on this issue. It may not be an issue to individuals opposite. It's certainly an issue to the people that voted for me to be here. I don't work for the council staff. I work for the ratepayers of Kingborough, and I do so proudly. And that's why I'm happy to be an independent voice on that matter. I'll end my discussion on that, Mayor, because I respect that we have to move on. But it's good that we had this discussion, and frankly, it's the first time we've had this level of airing on this particular policy.
Councillor Midgley, and then Councillor Bain, and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much, Mayor. And if I was to go after Councillor Cordova, I would say hear, hear. I agree with everything that he's stated, and he made very important comments, and I don't need to go over all the comments that I agree with that he said. But I'd also like to really thank staff as well for answering the many questions and the discussions that staff have, that my fellow colleagues have raised here tonight, and thank you so much for providing that due diligence on that. I'm happy with the current process as it stands, and not to complicate it. I'm happy with the due diligence and happy with the process. So I think we just move along, but it is good to have this discussion and see some of the concerns that fellow councillors have. I was away on the weekend with 12 people from Kingborough Municipality, and they are fully in support of this. I know a lot of people who are on the other side who fully support this offset policy, see the absolute importance to have this, and we should be proud as a council that we have this policy.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple of quick clarification questions, because I think I'm hearing that we've been told that the TPC won't make any suggestions for major changes. So I'm just a question. Through this process to date, if the TPC knew without doubt that something currently in our policy meant that they won't be approving the update, I guess my question is, would they point that out to us, or would we not find out until the ruling took place?
Mr. Stander.
Through you, Mayor, that's a good question. Certainly the Commission haven't indicated, given us any indication whether they support the updated policy in the planning scheme. I guess the predicament that we have, we currently have a policy in the planning scheme. So the question is actually, did the Commission, if there's errors, would the Commission go back on their decision to previously incorporate the document in the planning scheme? Forward back to today, I guess the only question that the Commission can ask, the changes that Council want to make to the policy, can that, you know, will that fit into the planning scheme, yes or no? So if they don't believe it fits into the planning scheme, they can refuse the planning scheme amendment. The case of how Council feel about the policy, we're the custodians of that policy, that's a separate question. So the Commission will purely make a decision on the planning scheme amendment and what they feel is appropriate to be mentioned in the planning scheme. So it could be one of two options. The Commission can decide to refuse the planning scheme amendment. In that case, the planning scheme will continue to operate as it is. It allows for the application of offsets. It is just then a case that we revert back to the old policy. So it's referring to a council policy that is now outdated. So that is if they refuse it. If they approve the application, the planning scheme amendment, obviously it will be with the updated changes. They potentially could make some of the changes to the planning scheme themselves. That's not unusual to happen. So if they go through the process and see some other errors potentially in the planning scheme, they can do it. I think they've been courteous to indicate to us and say, Council, these are some of the errors that we see, some of the ands and ors and so forth. They're in the right or in the wrong spot. Can you fix that up now? They don't have to ask us to do that. They can make those changes themselves. But to go back to your question, they haven't indicated to us whether they're going to support it or not, and I can't really advise you anything in that regard.
Councillor Bain.
Thanks. And just a second question. There's been some talk about potentially pausing the biodiversity going through the update in the planning scheme. If we were to do that, would that impact updating the reference to the updated public open space policy if we did pause the biodiversity one?
Mr. Stander.
Through you, Mayor. Another good question. It could be that the Commission, they can do this in a number of ways, but they potentially could say, well, we support the incorporation of the updated public open space policy, go ahead with that, and they could put the other one on hold. It's really up to them. One of the other options that they could do is, even if Council tonight decide not to agree to the amendments to the policy, they potentially could decide to go ahead with the planning scheme amendment with or without those changes and potentially say, well, we see those changes as minor, therefore we're not going to wait. I doubt that they would do that. You know, I think the Commission would like to have Council support. They won't just make a decision just on their own accord. They do understand the complexity of this policy. They do understand there are some concerns from the community, and so I think what they're trying to do is to follow due process.
Councillor Bain.
No, thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Briefly, due process is such a critical term here that I'm trying to explain that we're on a continuum, a timeline, where we've been kind of plodding along this timeline, and my first question is how many months, or potentially, if this process does stop right now, how many more months or weeks or days or years will it take to get us right back to exactly this point where the TPC will look at the amendments? How long, if we stop this process now, how long will it take to get right back here where we started?
Oh, it'd be like Groundhog Day. I don't have a crystal ball. Does Mr. Stander have one, or Ms. Tyler Moore, either one?
I certainly don't have a crystal ball, but what I would suggest is that the process would be obviously for Council to put up such a motion to review the policy. The policy review, there's no time frame for how long it takes to update the policy. From a planning scheme amendment, it most probably then mean that we'll need to start the process all over again, and by that time, I'm crossing my fingers here, we might have the new Tasmanian planning scheme in place. Unfortunately, there's no time frame. I would suggest 12 plus months or longer.
Thank you. And so through you, Mayor, to get to that point, even if the proponents of changes to this policy get what they want, which might be, you know, the abolition of the policy or the reduction of the fee from $570 to $100, whatever the outcome of that is, think of the cost to this council of redoing this entire process, of the staff time, of the cost of doing hearings before the TPC. Think of the potentially, I don't know, I'm guessing tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars of just completely wasted money on a vexatious claim. So we've heard I think the most telling thing about this is that large developers who do have the quote-unquote intelligence and do have the means to challenge this policy, the people with the brains and the money to challenge this policy haven't. They haven't because they know that it would be vexatious. Well, I don't know. It's silly to challenge it. It's absurd to challenge it. And let me put it this way. Occasionally you'll see videos of people at a traffic stop getting stopped by the police, and these sovereign citizens will make the claim that you can't stop me, I'm a sovereign citizen, and they'll use some esoteric rhetorical flourish to say that the reason why the laws don't apply to them is because, insert really absurd thing here. We've heard about, like, are local governments actually governments, or are they just body corporates? You know, these, you can pull out esoteric rhetorical flourishes and pretend that the laws don't apply, or the rules don't apply, or the policy is invalid or problematic or illegal. You can imply that with whatever kind of esoteric rhetorical flourish you want, but the reality is this, that if you have the means and the capacity, if you're at the TPC and you're up for $100,000 for biodiversity offset and you still don't challenge that, that's kind of an indication that it's not really worth your time challenging it. That the serious people in the room are not challenging the policy because they don't see that it is invalid or illegal or problematic or any of the other terms that we heard, illegitimate or, you know, any of those terms. Are those characterisations accurate? No, we've heard time and time again that that is to mischaracterise. It's to mischaracterise what this policy is all about, and it's to use a kind of a legal purgatory where you just send things for more public consultation and you delay and defer, and at what cost to the council, I say. So what is at stake? We've heard quite clearly that the characterisation of this policy as at all problematic is really just a smokescreen. Hidden behind that smokescreen is that some people don't like the policy. What's at stake? If we don't pass this tonight, it will tie up the council for months and end us up right back here, after all of the costs that are associated with that. So what are the costs of this vexatious exercise? I dread to think, but they are a lot. But just because a few people have, you know, the kind of sovereign citizen approach to the policy doesn't mean that we should throw out the process that we've all embarked upon for months now. So I really hope that we can let common sense prevail and we can just progress this through as is the reasonable and fair thing to do. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Just, excuse me, just noting that we're still in discussion, I just have a query given something that Mr. Stander just said about the Tasmanian planning scheme. Given we are so close, I think it is relevant to ask the question, what will the status of this policy be under the new planning scheme?
Through you, Mayor, somebody else asked me this question earlier today, so I'll try and keep it simple. The incorporated documents that we currently have in the Coomera Interim Planning Scheme won't be translated into the Tasmanian Planning Scheme, and the simple reason for that is a statewide planning scheme can't refer to a local council policy. So the Tasmanian Planning Scheme can't refer to a Coomera Biodiversity Offset Policy or a public open space policy. One of the options that we do have and that we can do is to have our SAPs referred to specific area plans, referred to the biodiversity offset policy. It should be noted that in the new Tasmanian planning scheme, the planning scheme will allow you to apply offsets. It just won't tell you how you can apply it. And I guess that's going to be a problem that we're going to face in the future. If we don't have a document that's incorporated into the planning scheme, how do we actually negate our process through that? If you don't have the incorporated document in your planning scheme, I guess there's going to be a challenge, and you know, it opens it up to inconsistencies. And that was the very reason why the biodiversity offset policy was introduced in the first place. So to answer your question, no, it won't be just a crossover, but we potentially could apply it in our specific area plan.
Have we in the proposed SAPs?
Yes, we have. The 2019 version of the council's LPS got a number of SAPs, and it's referring to the biodiversity offset policy. Okay. And now the outdated one, so obviously the Commission, if their support to move forward with the SAPs that Council proposed back then, I suggest that the Commission most probably was requires to reflect the new policy, but it just depends on the status of that policy at that point in time.
Councillor Street, anything further? I just want to make a couple of comments. It looks like we're going out of discussion, but before we did, I just want to say I think there's one thing missing from the discussion so far, and it's the third piece in the puzzle. And the third piece in the puzzle is, in fact, the Kingborough Environmental Fund and the reason why. Well, there's two things that I feel like we haven't covered so far. And one is that nobody's actually talked about the reason why we have biodiversity offsets. We have it because we're fortunate in Kingborough to have significant habitat that requires protection, and it's significant habitat that is home to some species that, if we're not careful, are going to become extinct in the future. And so that's the genesis of this policy, and I feel like that's got lost in this discussion, and it's all well and good to talk about the legalities and to talk about people not wanting to pay it, but can we bring this back to, you know, what is an offset? The offset, and why do we have it? We have the offsets because we want to have people provide compensation for when they want to cut down vegetation that will have an impact on living creatures. That's if we really want to bring it down to the basis of the argument, that's what it is. And I think that, you know, we are both lucky and also, I guess, vexed that we do have that situation, more so than any other municipality or any other local government area in Tasmania, that we have the endangered 40 spotted pardalotes that we know are on private land, and we also have the swish parrot that we know is endangered. And yet we have a situation where then people want to do large-scale developments, or they have a block of land that is an area where those species are nesting and breeding and travelling through, and they want to cut down that habitat and cut down those trees. Common sense to me would say, just as we pay for other things in life, like we pay for the benefit of parking in a public area where it's in short supply, that we actually then, that people pay for the privilege of doing that. And then then we look at, well, what happens to that? And for those councillors who last year came down to, I think it was Oyster Cove, I can't remember off the top of my head, I think it was around Oyster Cove, and we had the first anniversary celebrations of the Kingborough Environmental Fund. That was a living example of how the biodiversity offsets actually translate into practical action in Kingborough, because we were able to actually walk through a public property, a private property, and see the work that had been done, funded through that Kingborough Environmental Fund, to protect a whole range of things on that property and for the future. So, you know, to say that, oh, nobody's ever been happy about paying this or whatever, I think there are people who are happy about it because they've realised they've contributed to the ongoing sustainability of our community. And so I really would urge people to not look at one part of the argument here, but to look at this as a holistic thing, because that is very much what it is. It's not just, oh, we've got a policy and we've got the offsets that people have to pay. Look at the question. I went to a professional development thing recently, and somebody said, keep asking the question, why? Why do we have this? You know, why do we have it? Yeah, we have it because of this problem. Why do we have that problem? Because in the past, people were cutting down everything. Why is this bird nearly extinct? You keep asking the whys like a three-year-old would, and you get to the answer as to why we have this policy here today. So, look, I won't go on anymore because I'm conscious of the time and that we're coming hopefully to the end of our discussion so that we can actually move on. So are people happy now to come out of discussion? If so, I'm looking for a mover and a seconder for the motion. I have a mover in Councillor Gladewright and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Gladewright, on the substantive, on the motion.
Thank you. I'll be brief. So the purpose of this report is not to debate the merits of the policy, but to consider modifications to the policy as recommended by the TPC. The biodiversity offset policy ensures that offsets are implemented in a transparent and consistent manner and has been subject to several rounds of consultation. It is my understanding that in 2015, incorporated documents relating to the policy were exhibited for public consultation and was again exhibited for public consultation in 2020, but neither of those occasions attracted any public comment. In 2022 or 23, I'm a little confused about which one of those, incorporated documents were again exhibited for public consultation, which received 13 representations. During the hearing, the TPC gave the officers, as well as representatives, the opportunity to speak to the proposed planning scheme amendment. In response to this hearing, the TPC recommended several minor modifications to the biodiversity offset policy. I support the suggested modifications and I look forward to hearing the TPC's assessment in the future regarding the newer version of this policy.
Thank you, Councillor Gladewright. Further speakers? Councillor Antoli?
May I ask a question about the Kingborough Environmental Fund?
You can, yes.
Can someone tell me what do we do with the fund? How does it operate? Because we talked about the why and we talked about the need to support these changes to the policy to support the why.
Ms Quinn. And we did actually have a workshop on this some time ago for councillors that I believe that all councillors were present at where we went through...
I don't recall. I might have not been there.
No, you were here, I recall. But Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. The Kingborough Environmental Fund, as the Mayor has spoken about tonight, is the mechanism that Council uses to deliver offset actions on behalf of developers or landowners. So it's a very, very small proportion of offsetting in Kingborough. So the fund is only dealing with financial offsets, which are, as has been said previously, most offset actions in Kingborough are actually on the site where the native vegetation clearance occurs. And where that can't be done, so with the residual amount that can't be mitigated, those funds are, that's a financial offset and that's held in the Kingborough Environmental Fund. The fund is governed by a steering committee of predominantly external people to council and also a set of guidelines which are available on the website which have been previously endorsed by council. So it has a very strong governance model to it. Its role is to deliver those offset actions that are required as part of generally development permits. So the permit might say that because you've cleared a portion of swift parrot habitat on your site to make way for the development, you need to, and you've done a whole lot of actions on site, there's still some residual impact of that, and therefore you need to make a contribution to the fund. The fund then, to be strategic, because they are those last bits of offset, so it pulls them together, if you like, and then looks for offset actions that are strategic and efficient. So one example is what the Mayor spoke about, and the mainstream of the fund is the creation of private reserves. So the fund pays to put the values that have been lost into a private reserve that is protected in perpetuity and also to pay that landowner stewardship for looking after that reserve. So that might be through weed control or fencing or monitoring or other things that might be required to ensure that those values are managed in perpetuity.
So the fund, for clarification, supports people who own land themselves but helps them maintain that private reserve, the sort of almost like the operating expenses they might have to go through. That's not correct?
No. Through you, Mayor. No. So it's not a reserve to start with. So the fund actually creates the reserve on their land. So there's a fairly significant cost of doing that. So those reserves then become part of the National Reserve Estate and are official reserves like a national park, for example. So they're protected through a conservation covenant under the Nature Conservation Act, which is the state government legislation.
So one would suspect there that there was already trees there already, and then we ring fence those trees so that they can't be cut down. How do we then replace the net loss of trees?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. So the most efficient way and occurs in biodiversity offsetting throughout the world is to protect in perpetuity and to improve the resilience of vegetation that already, so those areas of critical habitat or vegetation that already exist. So the fund does also do a range of other things which you can see on Council's website. It also invests in recovery actions for threatened species which are outlined in the threatened species recovery plans. And it also does restoration or revegetation work as well, so hectares of revegetation as well on private land and council land.
Do we ever use, because people are paying money, and it was mentioned earlier, people are saying, I'm happy to pay to the fund, I'm chopping down these valuable trees. Do we actually plant new trees elsewhere that didn't exist through the fund?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor, yes, we do. And so far, as up to October 2022, the fund has planted 6.3 hectares over 5 sites, and there'll be another at least 2 or 3 sites this year.
Okay. And do we know how that compares to the number of trees we've permitted to cut down? Do we know, for example, let's say we've, since 2018, we've allowed 50 hectares to be cut down. Do we know that, or we don't know anything like that?
Yeah,
we don't have that level of detail.
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. An example of that is, for example, when we talked about these new private reserves that the fund supports and creates. So the target for the fund was 86.19 hectares, and the fund has actually achieved 242 hectares. So it's an incredibly efficient way of protecting those values in perpetuity for future generations. In terms of trees, because of the way the Biodiversity Offset Fund requires the metric, which is a 1 to 5, so there'll be at least 5 times more plants planted than are removed because of that risk that goes on, because planting obviously takes a long time to get to the habitat value that was lost, and there's likely to be some loss there. So that ratio allows for that.
Do we know what percentage of the offset is realised through ring fencing existing trees versus planting new ones?
Ms. Quinn.
The majority of the Kingborough Environmental Fund investment is in these new private reserves, and that is what the steering committee, which is made up of scientific experts in this field in the state, has declared that is the most important. It's very much like what the Tasmanian Land Conservancy do. It is the most efficient way of private land conservation in Australia.
Are we allowed to use the fund to reclaim unproductive land, or I think you might mention something around that. I'm not too sure, above and beyond just planting new trees. What else can we do with it that lifts the biodiversity of our community to hopefully compensate for what was taken or lost in the tree felling?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. So the fund guidelines outline 3 programs within the fund. They are new private conservation reserves, revegetation actions, which might be a bit about what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think so.
And recovery actions for threatened species. The majority of funds go to the thing that gets the best return for our community and for those species, which is private reserves. After that, restoration activities, which might be weed control, fencing, revegetation. And some of that, as I said, is on public land so that people can actually visit those sites if they would like to. And the smallest amount, which is only 8% of the entire fund, is on recovery actions for threatened species.
Thank you. Appreciate that. That was helpful.
Any further discussion on the motion? Otherwise, I'm going to put the motion, which was moved by Councillor Gladewright and seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Gladewright, did you want to sum up? No? Okay, so I'm going to put the motion. It's as printed in the agenda. Moved by Councillor Gladewright, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried. Unanimously. I'm very confused now. Okay, we might take a short break because we've still got a bit to go through. And it's also got very warm in here. We might open a couple of windows and have a short break, and we'll be back in 7 minutes. How's that? Thank you.